Uncover from CBC Podcasts brings you award-winning investigations year-round. Infiltrate an international network of neo-Nazi extremists.
He ranted with racist language.
Discover the true story of the CIA's attempts at mind control.
Their objective was to wipe my memory.
Or dig into a crypto king's mysterious death and $250 million missing.
There are deep oddities in this case.
With episodes weekly, Uncover is your home for in-depth reporting and exceptional storytelling. Find Uncover wherever you get your podcasts. This is a CBC podcast.
I don't remember the hit. I remember everything leading up to it, but nothing after. He came from behind me. I didn't see it coming.
That's retired Canadian NHL star Trevor Linden.
I was hit in the side of the head. I remember being confused. My ears were ringing. It's hard to talk about. I still experience pain, mood swings. The headaches are debilitating. But this isn't my story.
It's mine.
This is a new campaign from the YWCA in Vancouver. Not about concussions in the NHL, but instead a hidden epidemic. Women suffering from concussions after being physically assaulted by their partners. My next guest knows that experience personally. We're calling her Rachel because she fears retribution from her ex-husband and to protect their daughter. And a warning, this is a difficult conversation about intimate partner violence. Rachel, just to begin, thank you so much for joining us. It takes a lot of courage to talk about this, but I believe it's an important conversation to have.
Thank you.
I just want to go back a little in time. You were living with your ex-husband. Were you, in the days, weeks leading up to the incident, were you living in fear? Did you believe that he was capable of doing something this violent to you?
I was definitely in fear. There were other incidences. We were heading for divorce. I was sleeping in a separate room, and I would keep a chair behind the door. I didn't think it would actually keep the door closed, but it would at least warn me if he came in the room. There were small incidences, but I never in my wildest dreams thought it would get where it did. Mm.
And what do you remember about when it all came to a head? That particular instance. What do you remember about that incident?
We had an argument earlier in the evening over, you know, who was going to be home the following evening with our daughter. I needed to stay late at work. I had a lot going on, and he went out. When he came back later that night, I had approached him to, you know, apologize for the argument and say, you know, just let me have an extra half hour at the office, and then I'll be home in plenty of time for you to go. But it was like he didn't even hear a word I said. He threw me to the ground. He held me on the ground. And then it was just, he punched me repeatedly in the side of the head, the other side of my head, reverberating against the floor. He grabbed my hair and slammed my head into the floor several times. I just kept yelling. I was so surprised. I just kept yelling, you know, what are you doing? This isn't you. What are you doing? After probably, you know, 20 odd blows, you know, he went for my neck, and I was able to scramble free after that, got my daughter, and just ran straight for the car and left.
I'm amazed, Rachel, listening to your story, that you even had the capacity to do that after suffering a beating like that. Did you know in the moment, I'm sure your adrenaline was pumping, the extent of your injuries as you left the house?
I had no idea. I had no idea. There was a moment when I was on the kitchen floor where I was cognizant that I didn't know if he was going to stop. And, you know, that moment where you're not sure yet if you're about to be murdered, it's very, very strange. When I managed to get free and I grabbed my daughter, I was just on adrenaline. I mean, I didn't know what was happening. I wasn't even cognizant that I was making decisions. I was kind of following a narrative in my head that if you've suffered an injury, you go to the hospital. And so that's where I went. And that was when the full force of what happened started coming in. And I felt this pounding in my head that I had never felt before. There was pain everywhere. Yeah.
And in the end, and I'm so thankful that you had the instinct to get to the hospital quickly, what had he done to you?
Well, I had my whole body, legs and arms and whatnot, were covered in bruises and some lacerations. I had some on my neck as well. And then I had a massive, you know, goose egg on the side of my head. And of course, a pretty bad concussion. The concussion obviously being the worst part of it.
And that's something you live with to this day.
Yeah, the first 12 weeks were the worst, and then I had a relapse about 6 months later. But at this point, you know, I have some issues that are, you know, post-concussive syndrome that, you know, it's been 5 years now. They don't show any signs of improving, so it still has an impact on my day-to-day life now. I have work accommodations to help me deal with the day-to-day, but there's nothing that's going on that's going to help improve my situation. So, you know, I have special glasses for light sensitivity and stuff. And when one of those severe migraines comes now, you know, life just shuts down for a while until it's done.
We talked at the outset that if a hockey player or an NFL football player gets a concussion, you know, there's a national debate about what we have to do to make sports safer or improve helmets, or, you know, it goes on and on and on, and people weigh in about this. And I wonder about someone like you, you know, what kind of attention does this garner? Because as I look into this, I start to understand there are so many Rachels out there. There's thousands of women every year across Canada who are living what you live. And are you getting the proper support, given the fact this is being called, you know, an invisible epidemic that's happening in our own country?
Yeah, certainly I would say that I count myself lucky in how much support I had. And yet there are therapies out there and stuff available in my community that I had no idea even existed for years. It's not like there's a team there to, you know, necessarily try to make sure I get back to my best so I can get back on the ice or get back to life. Even getting into neurologists was something I had to specifically ask for through my doctor. And it was something that still it took three months before I could even get into them. So, you know, would earlier intervention have helped? Potentially. Certainly, that's something I imagine that elite athletes have access to.
And Rachel, I'm curious to know too, for you, as you're trying to work through the healthcare system and get the treatment that you need, was there an element of shame that you had to live with to be able to discuss what had happened to you and what this person had done to you?
Absolutely. It's not an easy question. You know, people ask where you've been. You know, you mentioned, oh, well, I had a concussion. Well, the next question is always, well, how did you get it?
Right.
And there's a stigma sometimes attached with who are these women who are being abused? And for me, I hold a fairly high position where I work. And, you know, I've literally had other women who have been in similar situations look at me and go and say, how are you here? You know, how does this happen to someone like you? Mm. And it's the nature of the abuse. It's the nature of the gaslighting. It's the nature of you never expect the father of your child, the person you married and spent 13 years with, to turn this way on you. Anyway, it's something that, you know, you don't want to talk about because you don't want to necessarily have to answer all those tough questions in all these different places. It's private. Yeah. And certainly you don't want to look any weaker, you know, by being labeled as someone who's gone through this.
But by sharing your story, as I said at the outset, it takes a lot of courage. I firmly believe it. It takes a lot of courage. And I really also believe that you can help others. So that's what I wonder. What do you want other women and potentially other victims who may be suffering in silence, what do you want them to get from your story, to learn from your story that may help them?
To be their own advocate, to get the help that they want, that they shouldn't feel any shame whatsoever about what happened. It's on him that he did that, not on you. The sheer fact that I consider myself lucky with the minimal amount of support that I had, I'd like to see that changed. I'd like to see women getting that, you know, who have been in this situation. They need the support. I mean, they're not just trying to get back on the ice. They're supporting kids. They're trying to reestablish life. I mean, all within one evening, my life got completely turned upside down. I couldn't set foot in that house again. I was lucky I had somewhere to go. Others need to rely on shelters and whatnot, and not just get the help for the concussion, but to get the help to get out of that relationship and get away. There are support networks out there. There's people who care, you know, and go find them.
It's a heartbreaking story, Rachel, and I'm also struck by the number of times you use the word lucky.
Yeah, I tend to try to find silver lining in just about anything. Otherwise, it's too easy to spiral. You know, you need to find those ways to help yourself heal. And the more I can frame things as being lucky and fortunate, the more I can, you know, not dwell on the negative side.
Let's hope, and I firmly believe this will help many, many other people by the fact you just shared that story. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And please take care.
Thanks. You too.
Rachel is a mother who suffered a concussion because of abuse from her ex-husband.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart McLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, as she mentioned, there is support out there. And Karen Mason is the co-founder and director of community practice for SOAR, supporting survivors of abuse and brain injury through research. It's a nonprofit that conducts research and helps survivors deal with concussions and brain injury from intimate partner violence. Karen Mason is also the former executive director of the Kelowna Women's Shelter. Karen, good morning. And I know you've been listening in to my conversation with Rachel. What stood out for you in Rachel's story?
Oh, her level of strength and resilience, which is something that we see time and time again with women survivors of intimate partner violence and brain injury and intimate partner violence.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I'm sure you see this all too often. You were involved with that YWCA campaign, which we had at the outset, which says that for every pro hockey player who suffers a concussion in a game, there are thousands of women in Canada who suffer concussions from abuse in their relationships. Tell us, how has this remained a hidden epidemic for so long?
You know, I think even though we're in 2023 and we've gone through the Me Too movement and grown awareness about intimate partner violence and equity issues for women, there's still so much shame and stigma around intimate partner violence. We, I think, as a society, we don't want to admit that this is happening at the level that's happening. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to believe that men who love their partners are beating and abusing their partners. I think that's really part of the problem. It's really systemic and has a lot to do with our patriarchal society, to be honest.
And what impact does that have in keeping this issue hidden?
It means we don't have structures and systems and supports in place for survivors. You know, up until I started working on this project specifically about 8 years ago, the notion that women survivors were probably experiencing brain injuries had never crossed my mind. And at the time, I was running a shelter for women survivors of intimate partner violence. I was training staff. I was going to conferences. And the notion that the women we were serving had very likely experienced concussions and other brain injuries from blows to the head, face, and neck, and from strangulation was just not something that had come to mind. So I think that's an issue across the board. We have all kinds of service providers who are supposed to be that first point of contact for women, whether it's paramedics, police officers, emergency room physicians, and forensic nurses, who may never have been educated in this and who aren't looking for it. So if a woman shows up at the emergency room and she has a broken arm, and it even comes to light that it may have happened in an intimate partner violence situation, often the focus will be on fixing the broken arm, not exploring whether there may have been other injuries to the head as part of the experience.
I'm also struck with Rachel's story, how it has become, as she said, her life changed in one night. And what she's living with now is a form of a life sentence. So tell me about the impact that a concussion from abuse can have on a woman's life. And I'm sure for a lot of the women that you have dealt with, the ongoing impacts of an incident like that.
You know, for most people, a concussion will resolve in about 4 weeks, but about 15 to 30% of people will have ongoing and chronic effects. And particularly in women who've experienced intimate partner violence, it's often the case that they haven't just experienced one concussion or one experience of brain injury from strangulation, which is incredibly and disturbingly common in intimate partner violence. They've experienced multiple, often over the course of weeks or months or years. So the implications are huge and devastating. When you've experienced a concussion and it becomes chronic, you know, you can have difficulty keeping track of tasks and completing tasks. You have problems with organizing your thoughts or with your memory. You can't really concentrate or focus on things. And then there might be, you know, sleep issues. Perhaps you don't get any sleep, or you sleep too much, or you're sleeping at odd times of the day or night. And of course, lack of sleep is a huge contributor to poor health outcomes. And then there are the emotional implications. People who've experienced brain injury can have a lot of trouble with regulating their emotions. So they might be irritable or quick to anger. They have experience with sadness and anxiety. And the implications of intimate partner violence for women are often things like depression, anxiety, PTSD. Some of those things often come along with brain injury as well. So women who've been in an intimate partner violence relationship are dealing with these, you know, multiple layers of implications that can create incredible challenges just in getting through life, not to mention trying to go to work. And if you're, you know, a single parent, which many of these women are, trying to parent your kids, trying to function, trying to keep a job, maintain safe housing. It is an invisible public health crisis, and it really is time that we paid more attention.
And there's another layer, Karen, I want to talk about and get your views on this. As women who are dealing with all those symptoms that you've just listed, and how these can be used against them in a courtroom when they're in a child custody case. Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we have seen typically in our legal system that things such as mental health issues and other health issues have tended to be stigmatized, particularly for women going through family law situations. And there's always been this concern that brain injury from intimate partner violence could potentially be weaponized against a woman who is seeking to get or retain custody of or access to her children. And it is a very real concern, although you consider the fact that, you know, if I'm a mom who plays recreational hockey on the weekends with my girlfriends and I suffer a concussion playing a hockey game, I guarantee you that nobody's going to show up at my door on Monday morning and demand that I give up my children because I'm suddenly unfit to parent. Unfortunately, that isn't the case, we understand, with brain injury and intimate partner violence and women who might be dealing with this and trying to get through the court system. So, some of the research done by one of our key research partners at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan, looked at how a diagnosis of brain injury might be used against a woman in the family court system. And the research did find that there were very strong potentials for it to be weaponized against her and leaving her vulnerable to possibly losing her children to her partner just because she'd experienced a brain injury. So it's pretty shocking and horrifying to consider that, particularly when you consider this is a physical injury that has been administered by the partner who might be then fighting for custody of those same children.
Karen, as I mentioned, you're part of this YWCA campaign, got Trevor Linden, the former hockey star, involved in this. I think it's a brilliant way to get the conversation going. What's been the reaction so far? You've just launched this campaign. What are people talking about now?
I have to say it's been remarkable to see and hear the reaction to this. You know, the statistic is just so mind-blowing. And for those who've never considered this issue, once you have realize this is a problem, you can't go back. And I think in 2 days since this campaign was released, I think the issue of brain injury and intimate partner violence has had broader scope of audience than it ever has, you know, in the 8 years that I've been working on this issue. So it's pretty incredible to see. But, you know, consider the numbers. Across the world, a third of women will experience violence at the hands of a partner in their lifetime. In Canada, the most recent statistic is 44%, so almost half of women report violence at the hands of a partner in their lifetime. And we make up half the population. So if you consider that as many as 92% of those women who've experienced violence at the hands of a partner may also have experienced a brain injury from concussion or strangulation, the numbers are absolutely staggering. And it's horrifying that we haven't cared about it or done anything about it till now.
Karen, it's a tough conversation, but I'm really glad we had it this morning. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for caring and covering this topic.
Karen Mason is the co-founder and director of community practice for SOAR, supporting survivors of abuse and brain injury through research, also the former executive director of Kelowna's Women's Shelter. If you or someone you know are affected by intimate partner violence, you can find resources for help at sheltersafe.ca.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.